J.P. Morgan warns of the calm before the storm, worrying echoes of the 2008 Lehman collapse. Will the Fed start cutting rates before year end? Welcome to ICR Trade. I'm your host, Pamela Ambler. Soon we'll be joined by our special guest, Bob Michael, Chief Investment Officer for J.P. Morgan, who's joining us from New York, and later our resident expert, Oxford Economics economist, Alex Holmes. When the Chief Investment Officer for J.P. Morgan starts telling clients to get out of equities and exit cash traps, investors tend to pay attention. The man tasked with managing $700 billion U.S. dollars of J.P. Morgan's assets is seeing worrying echoes of the 2008 global financial crisis. ICR Trade is brought to you by IC Markets, a leading high-performance trading provider. Trade up to IC Markets. Thank you for joining me today, Bob. And let's dive right in. For anyone listening that can't see the charts, we will talk you through the data. Bob, you're predicting a recession in the U.S. before the end of the year, but how confident are you in that prediction? Is it 50%, 60%, 100% sure that the U.S. will go into recession?
We're in that 50 to 60% range that will be in recession by year end. And if we push that out into the first quarter, we're somewhere in the neighborhood of over 80%. Everything we look at shows that things are slowing down. Every indicator that we look at that has previously been a perfect indicator of approaching recession is registering bright red. So we're very, very confident that over the next 6 to 9 months, the U.S. economy will be in recession.
And speaking of indicators, there is a lot of talks about whether it will be a soft or hard landing. What is this chart about T-bills and Treasury yields? What is this telling us?
Well, what we're being told is the central banks have become very aggressive on their battle of inflation, even if it means the economy being a casualty. And central banks are going out of their way to tell us that inflation is their top priority. Bringing it down to 2%, which is their target, is a must-have for them, and we're far too high now. So even though we see things slowing down, they are telling us they are going to continue to hike rates. It doesn't matter if it's the Federal Reserve, the European Central Bank, the Bank of England, the Reserve Bank of Australia, you can go on and on and on. That's what you're seeing in the market. You're seeing the front end stay very high still, which is typical of Treasury bills out to two-year notes pricing in additional rate hikes.
Now, we know that the Fed had paused in June. Is it possible that the Fed actually starts cutting rates before a recession hits?
Well, that's historically what we've done. We've gone back and looked at all the recessions back to 1980, and there's a same pattern every single time. The Fed hikes rates, then stops. On average, 13 months later, you're in recession. But midway to the recession, in fact, the Fed starts cutting rates. They see the slowdown in growth and inflation pressures. We think it might be a little different this time. We think it will be closer to the 1981 experience, which is also similar in terms of very high levels of inflation and central banks scrambling to catch up. If we go back to 1981, the Fed stopped hiking rates in June. Their last rate hike was in May. In June, they actually started cutting rates, and in July, you had recession. So in that period, May, June, and July, you had a rate hike, a rate cut, and recession. We think we're going to see something similar over the turn of the year.
And all this talk about recession, the probability is quite high. Is that somewhat at odds with the recent surge in the U.S. stock market that we're seeing? Is this rally sounding alarm bells for you?
No, it's not too inconsistent again from previous periods. As I said, the Fed actually has never hiked rates into a recession. Even in 1981, their last rate hike was a couple months before. In that period from last rate hike until the recession hits, which again, the average was 13 months, it's going to feel like a soft landing. The equity market will like that. The other thing that happened this time is that we had a crisis in the U.S. in the regional banking system. there was a crisis, there was a policy response. Investors looked at that, said it was solved. The markets had repriced dramatically lower in terms of risk and yields, and some of that has been retraced. It's similar to what we saw in 2008 from March to June, when again, Bear Stearns was a bank in crisis. It got bailed out through the purchase by JP Morgan. But then ultimately from March to June of 2008, equity markets rose somewhere between 15 to 25% as the entire world's property market was melting below our feet.
And one of the reasons for the rally in the equity markets has been a sort of over-exuberance over artificial intelligence. Are AI stocks caught in a hype bubble at the moment?
Well, I think that's a great question. And I keep thinking back to 2000 and the dot-com bubble. And I've been in these markets for a long time, since 1981. So I already had about 20 years of experience when that hit. If you had told me at the end of 1999 that we would be able to walk around with a phone and run our lives, including internet access and everything, I wouldn't have believed you. Can you imagine how big that bubble would have gotten if we knew that back in 2000? My point is that you can be right that the future of the internet was vast. I think the future of AI is going to be vast, but the markets can get ahead of it, maybe by a decade or so. And I think that's what's going on with AI right now. Ultimately, AI will prove to be correct and integrated into our lives, but the markets are quite euphoric right now. And the range of AI-oriented companies we see today may not be the leaders 10 and 20 years from now.
A decade from now is quite a long time. Now, if you look at what we saw in 2008, the S&P 500 fell 48% in the 6 months after its August 2008 peak. Should equity investors be running for the hills now?
Well, I think equity markets generally have great difficulty when central banks hike rates. And when you go into recession, like high yield, U.S. equities tend to bottom. So that's what we're expecting, is that we will be in recession sometime around year end, and that will be a bottom in the equity market. We're hoping it's not a similar experience 2008, where we'll be down 40%+, but you never know.
Another key risk that you point out is the real estate sector, but unlike in 2008, you're referring to commercial assets and not the residential property market. How big and severe is this risk?
Well, it's right under our nose, much like the housing market in 2007, 2008. I've traveled around the U.S. I've been to 9 different cities in the U.S. since the start of the year. I fly in that night. I stay somewhere in the central business district, and the next day, almost all of my meetings are in the perimeter. And the meetings that are in the central business district, the office buildings are empty. And I don't mean they're only about 50% full. I don't even know if they're 5% full. These are very big legacy cities with flagship office properties in central business districts that somebody owns. And if we go back to 2019, pre-COVID, and you think about the structuring of a REIT or a commercial mortgage-backed securitization, or where a bank wanted to make loans, central business district office space was the premier property. Everyone was fighting over it. Now vacancy rates are high and rising. I think there are going to be some pretty significant write-downs there.
Now, of course, if the U.S. economy does blow up, it's good to have cash, but equally that can create what you call a cash trap. So people sitting in money markets, what should they do right now?
Well, let's hope that the U.S. economy doesn't blow up. Let's just hope we go into a moderate recession. I think the typical recession in the U.S. has just been about 1.6 to minus 1.8%. Maybe we'll be somewhere around minus 2%. Which is fine. The cash trap that we're talking about is the allure and comfort of money market accounts that yield over 5%. You can buy treasury bills of over 5%. Feels very safe, comfortable, it's cozy. but you're also taking a big risk. You're hoping that those yields will be there for a long period of time. As we said, we expect the Fed to start cutting rates by year end. And once they start cutting rates, you're going to see, call it the 5% yield in the aggregate bond market, also have some capital appreciation on it. I think over the next 12 months, an aggregate bond fund will return at least 10%. I think when you look at cash with the Fed cutting rates, your return on cash is going to be somewhere around 3.5% to 4%.
I'm going to bring in Alex Holmes now from Oxford Economics into our conversation. Alex?
Hi, Bob. So the front end of the curve isn't the place to be, but is there somewhere you'd like to be on the curve? Is there a sweet spot?
Well, the sweet spot to us feels somewhere in the intermediate part of the curve, the 5 to 10 year part of the yield curve. Yes, yields are a little bit lower than cash, but they're still pretty good. There's also an entire range of assets you can buy in that part of the yield curve. What we are looking for is high quality duration, investment grade corporates, securitized credit, agency mortgages, things that have a very high credit quality to it are investment grade at a minimum, and we know will be money good. I think that's the current sweet spot in the bond market.
What about high yield credit? That's been doing pretty well recently. Is there still some resilience in that, or is that a bad place to be heading into a recession?
Historically, the bottom in high yield or the widened credit spreads occurs during recession. We've gone back and looked over the last 35-year history of high yield, and every time in a recession, credit spreads have widened to a minimum of 800 basis points. Currently, we're about 450 basis points over the Treasury curve. That's pricing in a soft landing, and a soft landing to us is just too aspirational right now.
And at the geographical level, are you just looking at the U.S. at the moment, or are there opportunities overseas as well?
Yeah, there's a lot of opportunity overseas now. We have to get used to a European bond market that actually has a very nice positive yield to it, that's pricing in additional rate hikes from the European Central Bank as high as 4%, maybe even a little bit higher. That's one place we're looking, because Europe is historically a region of the world where investors like fixed income. They haven't liked it much over the last 15 years with zero to negative yields, but they should return in earnest, and that market's repriced pretty dramatically. The other market that we like a lot is local emerging market debt. We've been impressed by the emerging market central banks. We've been tracking the policy response to inflation of the various central banks, and we categorize them in two ways, developed market and emerging market. We've looked at the cumulative amount of developed market central bank rate hikes since the start of 2021. It's been about 5,000 basis points. So nothing to see to sneeze at. That's a lot of rate hikes. When you look at the emerging market central banks since the start of 2021, they started hiking rates a year earlier than in the developed market. They're over 28,000 basis points in rate hikes. Those markets are seeing very high yields. You're seeing inflation cool off. You're seeing growth slow down. And you're starting to hear from those central banks that they may actually start cutting rates.
Well, thank you very much, Alex. Well, Bob, currencies, that's part of your remit as well. Where do you see the greenback amid this recession?
Typically, the U.S. dollar peaks right about the last rate hike. The Federal Reserve is telling us that they are going to hike rates 25 basis points in July. We're not going to fight that. We think that will be the last peak for the U.S. dollar. After the Fed has finished hiking rates, the dollar tends to come off quite a bit. Markets that look attractive to us, we talked a little bit about Europe. You also have to look at sterling in the UK. The Japanese yen looks attractive. And of course, emerging market local debt looks attractive because those central banks started their doing their job a year earlier than the developed market central banks. So there's a lot out there outside of the dollar that will present opportunity by the end of July.
And what does a weaker dollar, when that occurs, what does that mean in relation to some of the world's other major currencies?
Well, it means that they can start to see some appreciation, it will help them to combat inflation. When your currency weakens, that tends to bring in a lot of foreign direct investment. It brings in a lot of tourism. That can heat things up. It can make it more difficult for your central bank to fight inflation. With a stronger currency, it helps the central bank maintain its battle on inflation.
Thank you for your insights, Bob. A very big thank you to our special guest, Bob Michael, Chief Investment Officer for JP Morgan from New York. So there you have it. 2023 is a year of fixed income. You heard it straight from the horse's mouth. Thanks for tuning in to episode 8 of I See Your Trade. I See Your Trade is brought to you by IC Markets, a leading high performance trading provider. Trade up to IC Markets. Thanks for joining us, and we look forward to seeing you next time.